Welcome, our fellow lovers of love, and thank you for joining us on yet another excursion through the stream of consciousness down the river of tranquility to fill the lake of life with love.
And good evening, our fellow lovers of love out there. We're going to join us tonight on this journey through the complexity of life. Oh, my Lord, not one of these nights again.
It's going to be great.
Join us through the complexities of life and relationships in this episode of Late Night Love as we delve into the raw emotions and tough decisions that shape our existence. I'm not going to go through this because I will not make it tonight. But we go through the regrets of parenthood to the practicalities of car repair. And talks about the dilemmas of economy and navigating the aftermath of a partner's hurtful words. Oh, good Lord. Dealing with ex who overstayed their welcomes and, parenting challenges that test our limits. And we all been there.
Yes.
But before we get started with all that, did you know something I think I had known before, but I just found out again recently that, the customer is always right is only half of the quote.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. The customer is always right in the matter of taste. Oh. That's the full quote. Which is a vastly different meaning than we've all thought of it as.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, it's whatever the customer likes, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, need is in the eye of the beholder, So taste is customers always right in the matter of taste. But doesn't mean the customer's behavior is always correct. So we've kind of allowed this to be used as an excuse for, poor behavior by customers and whatnot, and putting up with bad behavior when really... it's just as you don't judge a customer by their taste.
All these years.
How many of us have been sitting around, the customer's always right. We've either used that or have it thrown in our face in some form or another. And it turns out it's been used incorrectly. Imagine that. Sometimes we shorten things too much. That's the danger of shortening things too much. So that's all. That was all that one was. That was an interesting one. So let's see. I do have one thing. Let me see if I can get this right. So we're going to watch this because I want your comments after this one.
And
this is a comment of a video. So they're doing one of these commentary videos. They're commenting on some TikTok video. And this is the Dadvocate, which she gives some good advice. And my guess is, if you were to sit her down and have a 5-10 minute conversation, you would find she'd have a bunch different perspective. But in this format, her perspective is, shall we say, shallow. Not necessarily wrong, it's just shallow. So that's...
husband while we were separated because I was having a panic attack and he was my safe person. Him coming to pick me up, even though I was the one divorcing him. I completely understand this. I did it several times. I struggle with the sadness of the decision, but it was needed. So your ex-husband is needed, but he's your ex-husband. Mine didn't come. I go through them alone now, and it hurts every time. There is a disconnect happening where women are leaving their men, yet expecting them to stay and keep performing their husbandly duties. Do you think if he called her having a panic attack that she'd even pick up the phone? Being expected to constantly provide and care for people who have given up on them is not good for men's souls and their growth. It is beating them down mentally. Even if it's not your intention, it is so incredibly manipulative to break up with a guy and then expect him to console you through the breakup.
It's not that she's necessarily wrong, because you do want to move on, right? You do want to move on as soon as possible, but every relationship, every breakup is different.
Okay, now, first off, I'd like to say this phenomena happens with not just women doing this, but men do this too.
Especially early on, as you're having to rebuild your...
especially when you're young.
Yeah, well, and you're having to rebuild your support systems.
Yeah.
Right? And so you haven't rebuilt your support systems yet. And so if your relationship is breaking up on relatively good terms, as these things can be, it makes sense that sometimes that, at this point, he's not performing husbandly duties. He's performing friend duties.
That's what I think. Yeah.
Now, it's best for both of them if you can find someone, if you can shift that to somebody else as soon as possible. It's best for both of you. But no one wants to see somebody who they care about, you know, have to suffer through something like that alone when they know it's not good for them. And so there is a line there, right? If you're repeatedly doing that, if you're not making efforts to create a new a support system, then that's fine. And if you broke up with somebody in a brutal way and then kind of expect that behavior in return is a different issue, right? You don't want to expect it, because it would be well within his rights to say, I can't emotionally do that. It's just, I can't do it. And you'd have to respect that as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, my hat's off to both of them for being mature enough to be able to set their differences aside in a moment of humanity, a greater humanity. I think that is the more important lesson, that despite our hurt feelings, despite our negative emotions, that we can set those aside for a time and help another human being not suffer so badly. I think that should be acknowledged and rewarded rather than,
you know, I think so too.
And you know, and again, it's shortly after she hasn't built her support network up. She didn't turn, no else to turn. And he was man enough to pick up the phone. So congratulations. And you know, so,
but I would have to say it's, I mean, it would be okay a couple once or twice, but you need to really get your support system in place.
Yeah.
Elsewhere, too sweet.
Yeah. For both of you, for the sake of both of you.
Both of you. Yeah. And you don't want to. And you want to treat the new relationship with respect. You know, you're starting off on a new footing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't want to abuse that friendship.
Yeah, not all ends have to be brutal, right?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it can be, we're just not good living together. You know, we're better as friends. We're better having separate lives. We're just, for whatever reason, we're toxic when we're together 24 hours a day. So we're just better having separate relationships. But in times of need, you know, they can still be there for you.
Yes.
It can happen. So I don't think these things are as cut and dry. And my guess is, if you sat her down and had a conversation with her about it, my guess is the format is, you know, the YouTube, TikTok format is creating that problem as much as anything else. Okay, so we've got some life questions this week that we're going to start with. All right, so what do we got?
Okay, life questions. No lying. Did you regret having children?
Not ever a minute.
No, I never did.
But it is a phenomenon that exists. People, for whatever reason, even if they love their children deeply, they can regret. Maybe they regret they had children because they weren't as good of a parent as they wanted to. There's 100,000 reasons.
I was going to say, there are times when I questioned, you know, I look back, and because I first became a mother, I was 20. You know, I look at 20 years old, I look back now. Oh my, what was I thinking? You know?
Well, the thing about becoming a parent is, if you think about it too hard, you'll never do it.
Yeah. That's true.
From a rational perspective, it's a stupid idea, but but there's nothing rational about it. The rewards aren't rational. The rewards are a deeper meaning in your life, something to care about that's bigger than you. And that's the reward that parenthood gives you. It's not something tangible. So, and not all people are cut out to be parents, and sometimes trauma can, you know, change our perspectives on it, you know. So no, I have personally never regretted having children, never once, even in the darkest days of my life.
Me too.
It's never been a regret.
Yeah.
Okay, what's next?
Is it ever worth fixing a car when the repair costs are more than what the car is worth?
Well, if the car, okay, well, there is a number of issues. One, again, we go back to the emotional cost. If there's an emotional connection to the car and you want, but also it's not just the worth of the car, it's the worth of replacing the car. If it's cheaper to fix a car and get it up into good running order than it is to buy a different car that may or may not have problems that you do or don't know about, then it's cheaper to fix that car. Just because the car doesn't have any value. Maybe the car is only worth $3,000. It's going to cost you $4,000 to fix it. But to go buy a car that will be as reliable as that car after it's done was going to cost you $8,000. What's the better deal? Mm-hmm. So it's not so simple as of calculation as the pure value of that car. It's the value of the car you have to replace it with. What are you going to replace it with? It's finding, I had this discussion with an insurance company. I said, I know the car is only worth whatever it is, but I'm never going to replace it at that value. I just want my bumper fixed. I just want my bumper fixed. That's it. I don't care. Just fix my bumper. So they fixed my bumper. It cost almost as much as the car was worth, which is why they didn't want to fix it. But I didn't cause the accident, so you're fixing my bumper. That's it. And I was completely honest with them. I told them what dents they weren't responsible for. You know, unlike other people were doing, I was actually honest with them and didn't expect them to pay for things that wasn't the result of the accident. Just fix the bumper you broke. I don't even really care about the paint job. Just fix the bumper. You know, they painted it and did it up all nice and right. But I didn't really care. Just fix the bumper. That's all I really cared about. But there's a bracket was broken, and so they had to replace it, put a new one on, which meant they had to put a new grill on, which meant it had to be painted. It was a whole big ordeal. But my car was reliable, and the cost of a replacement of the bumper was technically more expensive than it was the car was worth. But I was never going to get another reliable car for that cost. So, no, you're fixing the stinking bumper. Right? That's how sometimes these things go. All right, what's next?
Okay, why did Las Vegas change their business model from free parking, cheap meals, and free flights to charging for them?
Okay, well, this is easy because they no longer need to entice people to come. They had to have all those enticements to encourage people to come. Now they have more people than they know what to do with. So what do you do when you have more people than you know what to do with? You raise prices. It's what Disney does at Disneyland. The reason they raise prices is to manage the crowds at the parks. And that's why they're so expensive, because if they were cheaper, the parks would be so crowded that no one would have a good experience. And so you raise the prices so people go less, but the people who do get to go have a better experience. And it's the same principle in Vegas. People will come now without those things, and they still come in droves. So why would they actually encourage? They don't need to. Yeah. Okay, what's next?
My attorney has threatened me that if I don't settle, he'll drop me as a client. Can he legally or ethically do this to me? What can I do?
Well, my guess is the settlement is as much as you're ever going to get. He's probably told you this directly a number of times, that despite what you think, your case is only worth a certain amount of money, and this is as good of a deal as you're going to get, and no amount of work is going to be worth it to him or you, and so he's done with you. You've exceeded the time that he's ever going to recoup in his costs. He's probably at this page, he's lucky to break even. And then, yeah, you'd have to go find another... You'd have to go find another lawyer, and good luck. Because they're going to look at your case. They're going to say, why didn't you settle? They're going to find out that you're probably being, you may have a point, but the realities of the legal, the realities of law, that's probably as good as you're going to get. Lawyers don't turn away money. And
no, they don't.
And so if he wants you to settle his case, it's probably about as good as you're going to get. Now, you may want to go and ask a different lawyer if that's as good as you're going to get. Kind of like go getting a second opinion with a doctor, but it's going to cost you a little bit. You could go consult with another attorney. would probably be my official recommendation, but my guess is you're probably tapped out as much as the case is worth. And when it comes to time, and so you're more emotionally invested in the case, and you're not looking at the realities of the world. Would be my guess. All right. So we're on to relationships. All right. So what do we got tonight?
Okay. My wife told me that she doesn't love me and never did. How should I proceed?
Well, one, it's probably not exactly true.
Yeah, something's going on.
No, it's the...
I got a red flag here.
No, it's the end of a relationship, and you know how those things can sometimes get toxic. And so, what do? When those things happen, you do the one. You start just saying things that you know will hurt somebody else. It's accept the end of your relationship. Realize that the beginning years of your relationship were probably as you perceive them, but some point along the line, the last few years, it's gone completely off the rails, and you know, it's okay. Two people can have different perspectives on events. It's just time to move on. That's all that one is. She's deliberately trying to push you away.
You don't think she's depressed?
It could be, but my guess is she wants to end the relationship, and she doesn't want to do it, so she's kind of forcing his hand. That doesn't happen out of nowhere. This is a long string of, okay. They've probably been fighting on a near daily basis for 6-7 months, and that kind of comes out in one of those things. And when you get to that point, the likelihood of being able to repair your relationship long term is slim. I'm not going to say it's impossible, but it's slim, and you have to, right? Because you don't get there for nothing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of hurt under this bridge, and so my guess is there's a lot of hurt both ways, and you're not going to be able. Just as she's not going to, she doesn't even want to repair. You know, my guess is he may want to, but she doesn't. And unless both people are willing to row in the same direction, you're just going to end up back there. In this case, it's don't believe that she never did. But when she tells you she doesn't love you now, she probably doesn't. The never did part was simply an arrow trying to hurt you. The first one was truth.
Why can't people just say, I'm done here?
Because emotion gets involved and you have arguments and you end up saying deliberately hurtful things because you don't want to actually physically hurt them. What you say when you physically want to hurt somebody, but you know you don't want to, and so you do the next best thing.
Where does the love go?
It's a lot of water under the bridge. That's where it goes. Okay, what's next?
Girlfriend told me that she feels disturbed because I want to have sex with her on a normal basis. How do I go about this? Okay, they're in their early 20s.
Yeah.
Well, apparently she doesn't like it that much.
That one, you could get better at it would be one of my suggestions. You know, and it's not uncommon for different people to have different perspectives on how much sex you want to have.
You need to have that conversation with her. How often
you may simply be finding out you're not physically compatible.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, you might be finding out the way you deal with the major issues is also not compatible. You know, there's two things you're dealing with on this. There's two things you're learning about each other on this occasion. One, you're learning about how your issues with intimacy, how you're going to navigate that part of your relationship. But you're also learning how you're going to navigate issues within your relationship. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one, it's a, I applaud you for asking the question on how to properly navigate this. Because most people don't ask. They just try to navigate it. And, you know, you'll take a bunch, they'll take a bunch of different approaches and find one that fits you. Probably create one out of your own, but you'll take the knowledge and learn something from each person's opinion. Or not. Hey, some opinions you don't want to learn from, right? So there is where you, that's the picking and choosing. That's the interesting part. But they're young. This is a relatively normal conversation. And, you know, how you deal with it is how you deal with it. You go about it by, you know, first just starting having those difficult conversations. And if you can't have those difficult conversations without getting overly emotional, then you have some maturing to do. And it may very well be she feels pressured. And you know, like anybody else, once you feel pressured to do something, it becomes more of a chore than a desire. And so there's that.
Yeah, that's probably what's going on here.
Yeah, so just want to throw that out there.
She feels pressured.
There's a lot of things that could be going on, but that is, if she's feeling pressured, she may be turned off by that simple. It's a relatively simple equation. So, all right, what's next?
I accidentally read some of my girlfriend's messages. Now I feel betrayed and I have no idea what I'm supposed to do. Where do I go from here? How do you accidentally read messages? Now you got to confess that you read her messages.
Yeah, well, and these are a 21 and a 20-year-old female, just so we're clear. And so and the question is, what are the actual messages? Because feeling betrayed, there's levels of betrayal. Is it physical betrayal, emotional betrayal? You know, she's just not telling her things that, you know, she thinks she should be talking to her about. But, you know, it's the girlfriends, and you're not at the stage where you have to tell everybody about everything in your life. You know, who knows? But yeah, that's why you, this is a hard one, right? Because if you find something out that you probably should know, you know, it, then what do? Now you're screwed and you're going to confront an immorality because
you were immoral.
Yeah. Of course, the only way to deal with that is, you know, I was reading your messages the other day.
Just plow right through it.
That's the only way to do it. I mean, if it's that big of a deal, then the only way to do it is to simply hit it right at the start. Just kind of try to gloss right through it, gloss over it, and get into what you want to talk about right after that. Kind of hope it doesn't come back to you. That's it. Sorry. That's the best way. You know, hit him with that one first.
You could get lucky and she may just totally blank on it.
The hope is that you're going to get caught up in the discussion about
right, what she did. Right. She just kind of just going to blank on that. Right?
Yeah. That's the hope. Good luck.
Two weeks later, she's going to come back. Hey, wait a minute.
Well, it depends how serious of the theoretical betrayal this is. If it's a serious theoretical betrayal, then you're actually pretty safe on using that method. If it's a wishy-washy one, well, you're in trouble.
They're in their early 20s. It could be anything.
Yeah. It really could be anything. She could be saying, I don't like her new haircut, but then she told you that she thought you look great. And now you feel betrayed because she told you a lie about how your new haircut. And, you know, and if you now, if that is, you just shut the hell up. You don't say a dang thing. You know, that's if it's that type of thing, you don't say anything. Because you weren't meant to read that. She did the right thing. She told you your new haircut looked great. You wanted reassurance that your hair, you know,
Too late now. You got it cut.
Yeah, I know. There's nothing she could do about it. And if she'd have said, well, I liked it the other way. Wish you had done that. Or it looks like you saw someone put a bowl on your head and used a razor. What's wrong with you? I don't think it would have gone over that well. So, you know, I suppose you could blame them for doing the white lie and feeling betrayed that they weren't honest with you, but you don't have a moral leg to stand on after reading their messages. So you just be quiet. If it's something serious, well, then, yeah, you just hit it with the front thing and then move on to the actual issue, and you likely will be able to get away with it. Now, if you happen to be wrong or have misconstrued the messages, and you're screwed again. But yeah. Oh, what a tangled web we weave.
I was just going to say that.
Just saying, you know. So I don't know. Again, not to thank God I'm not young. That's the one thing it is. That's.
Oh, everything. I was offended by everything.
Everything. Yeah. Well, everything's so important in your life. And then by the time you're in your 50s, like, I've done everything 30 times. It's not really that big of a deal. So,
really?
Okay, what's next?
Okay, partner made vivid sexual comments about how great having sex with a tiny girl is and triggered my eating disorder. How do we move forward? I think counseling, definitely.
Yeah, it's the context is key. And without knowing context, it's hard to know if he was, you know, if you're just sitting here just having a discussion about, you know, your past sexual relations and what you kind of like in an ideal world, and his ideal somehow conflicts, triggered off your eating disorder. I don't necessarily think you could blame him for that. Right now, if he knows you have an issue with body identity and he kind of brought it up on purpose, that's a different issue. So context matters in terms of that. But, you know, everybody has their preferences, right? But that doesn't necessarily mean that that's what you settle on. No, that's the wrong way to phrase that, because it's not settling. You know what I mean? Your theoretical ideal is often a theoretical ideal for a reason, because it doesn't exist, at least in any practical terms.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know,
it's just fantasy.
Well, love and theoretical ideals are not the same thing, right? The person you don't have intimate relations with the person you love because of their physical beauty. You love them because of their inner beauty. Their physical beauty may attract you initially, but physical beauty changes over the years. Most of the time, people are attracted by inner beauty, not exterior beauty. Exterior beauty is very superficial. Those relationships don't last long. So the question is, you know, is he having just a moment where you guys are sitting there talking about, you know, your kind of theoretical, I'm having issues with words tonight. Yay. Your theoretical, you know, ideal versus, anyway, I'm repeating myself, so let's move on.
All right.
That was a terrible answer to that question, by the way.
I can no longer stand my fiance's ex living with us. How do I suggest she moves out? Okay. They're living with his parents.
Uh-huh.
The ex had, after they broke up, the fiance and the ex broke up. The ex found out she was pregnant with twins.
Okay.
So she moved in with the family to help take care of these twins. So here comes this young lady. She's a couple years younger than everyone else. And, you know, she just doesn't want to do this anymore.
Sweetie, you signed up for a complicated relationship. And if you can't take it, you have to step out. Because everybody else is going to put as putting those twins ahead of everything else. And if you expect to be put ahead of them, you're going to get run over. And you can take your place in this highly complicated family, and or you cannot. This family has decided their path. They're not going to change it for you. This is, they're all about them twins. And so you have to make a choice. You're either going to have to accept this because, one, it's not your house. It's the family house. This is one of those generational houses, and this is the relationship. If someone wants to move, he's the one that's going to have to move out the house. So if there's any suggestion about moving out the house, it's him and you.
Yeah. It's pretty, yeah. Pretty cut and dry.
Yeah. It's him and you, or you're the one who's going to have to go if you can't take it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't take you're not ready. Maybe you're never ready for this type of thing. It takes
it's an awful lot.
Yeah, it's a big thing. There's no shame in saying it's too complicated of a relationship for me to want to navigate.
That happens.
There's no
that
shame.
Happens sometimes. Yeah. No.
There's no shame.
No. None at all.
It's actually a very mature decision to make. So, you know, understanding your limits.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know. Good luck. But if you're going to move, you're the two are the ones who's going to have to move.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Okay. My mother and I got into a fight about me not having kids about 4 months ago. She has proceeded to give me the silent treatment since then. I'm not sure what I should do about this.
Nothing.
There's nothing you can do.
Yeah. Let her give you the silent treatment. Enjoy the peace. You guys have been arguing over this for a while. Enjoy the peace. She has a lifetime thing about having grandchildren, and she's dead, and now she's realizing she's not going to get that. So she's hurt. She'll adjust. And she's probably just slow at adjusting. She'll adjust. Or she won't, and you don't need that negativity in your life.
That's such a personal decision, having children.
Yeah, and your mother being, this is one of those things where I'm willing to bet her mother's half the reason she doesn't want to have kids. Her mother would have just shut up. She probably wouldn't have be so, you know, dug in about not having kids. Just saying, there's sometimes, you know, we pressure our kids into doing something and we actually pressure them into doing the exact opposite. You know, kids is a major thing, but like I said, emotions don't make sense. We're talking emotions here. We're not talking logic. So there's nothing to do. You reach out on Mother's Day, birthdays, and holidays, and you let the relationship take its own course. Don't harm yourself.
Unfortunately, I'm sorry.
Yeah, don't.
Sounds like you miss your mom. Sorry about that.
Yeah, don't harm yourself in the process. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Be gentle.
Okay.
All right. Okay. My wife invited a former college friend to stay at her house and she won't even be home. Am I crazy for feeling uncomfortable about it? It's another female.
Are you? No, you're not crazy for being uncomfortable about it. It's perfectly normal. And your wife is apparently perfectly comfortable with you being in a, yeah. So
in that type of situation, she's all right with you. So she trusts you.
Pass yourself on the back for being trustworthy, for your wife being trustworthy. And the fact that you find this uncomfortable is probably one of the examples of why she finds it trustworthy. It's going to drive him nuts. You know, so. Yes, no, you're not crazy for feeling uncomfortable about it. Two is, I suppose if you could afford it, you could spring for her Airbnb or something, but I don't know. I just do it in good faith. Go through if you really need to, just schedule yourself gone most of the weekend, you know, come home, have some dinner, you know, do kind of a couple, but just plan to not be around all that much.
Yeah.
If you're really that uncomfortable. But, you know, my guess is you guys will probably get along fine. You know, you're not going to try to do anything silly, so you're fine.
You know, just don't drink.
There you go. That's always a good idea. Don't buy any wine.
Don't drink. You'll be fine.
Yeah, don't buy any wine and you'll be fine. There you go. That's actually a very good suggestion because people do stupid things when they get drunk. So don't even start the path. All right, we're on to parenting tonight.
Yes.
All right.
Response to mother-in-law, let him soothe himself to sleep, the mother-in-law said.
Uh-huh.
And the baby's about 5 weeks old.
It's, yeah, you say that's not how we've chosen to parent, and you just go parent as you wish. There's lots of different parenting styles. Lots of them can be right or wrong. You've made the choices, and so you just, you know, have a no judgment response. So we're just doing things differently. So, yeah. Sadly, and the best way to do it is the simple and direct method, because you give any kind of wishy-washy answers, they tend not to hear it. So you have to be simple and direct, but non-judgmental. Okay.
Okay. Shaving body hair, 9 year. Okay, there's a 9-year-old girl.
Uh-huh.
And hereditarily, the family is hairy.
Uh-huh.
And it's dark.
Uh-huh.
And the other kids at school are starting to mention it.
Yeah.
About this little 9-year-old girl.
Okay.
And she's talking about shaving. And they don't know about letting her or not.
Well, from a physical aspect, there's probably no harm. The kids will get used to it. So the teasing will stop. So the teasing will stop relatively soon. I don't know. That's a difficult one. Because you can actually understand. I mean, does it? No, you don't want to, because I don't want to be using chemicals on a 9-year-old like Nair and whatnot either.
How about to talk to the doctor?
Yeah, my guess is this is a family trait and it's not unusual. I remember relatively early age having some people be, you know, overly hairy and they're dark. And it's just what it is. And
I remember too.
And she's just going to have to learn to live with it at some point. And it's just how it is. And sadly, she just has to start young. But I just don't know. It's a tough one. Because essentially you're talking about her arms. Because, you know, you kids, you just wear pants. No one sees your hairy legs.
No one sees your legs.
So she's got hairy arms. The kids see her hairy arms and they're making fun of her over it.
Yeah.
And as kids will do. Now, the other thing to do, there is another way to deal with it, is I was watching a midget comedian. And what his father did, his father, when he was young, taught him to verbally defend himself. So when people were teasing him, he taught him how to tease them back, you know? And some vicious ones. Yeah, your mom no longer lives with your dad. And when he says some of these comebacks, ha ha, you're little. Ha ha, your dad, your mom no longer lives with your dad. You know, these kind of things. Yeah. So you could teach her to, you know, sticks and stones and break my bones, but words never hurt me. But you can teach her to throw a few words back, take some power back in the conversation. Of course, you may end up creating a lifetime comedian out of it, and I'm not necessarily sure if that's a good or a bad thing. So that's a tough one. I would actually suggest that you go find someone who's had a child that's kind of gone through similar things and have a discussion with them. Ask your mom, someone in your family, you know, how they dealt with it.
Yes.
As parents. It's really the best thing I could think of.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. My wife desperately wants another child. I don't. And he's afraid that how it's going to affect their relationship. He wants to put all his resources into the child that's there.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want to split attention, money. He doesn't want to do it.
Well, okay, that's not how actually child rearing works. You don't split attention. It's not how it works.
But he doesn't want to do it.
I understand. His fear of resources might be somewhat accurate. I disagree that each child doesn't cost the exact same. You know, there's some savings in numbers. So, you know, you buy in bulk, there's some savings there. You know, and not every kid costs. It's not like a kid costs. He's just throwing out a number for perspective. A kid costs 10 grand a year to raise. If you have a second one, it doesn't cost 20. It costs like 15, 16. Because there's some savings mixed up in there somehow. Right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to. The housing cost doesn't cost. The house is going to cost the same, especially if you're smart and just put them in someone in the same room. You know, there's house costs that don't have to change. And don't. Double. But here's my thing. The relationship is going to change whether they have this baby or not.
Mm. Yeah.
Because she's going to have a dream that she can't have is going to be crushed. And there's no right or wrong answer. There's just not. There's the answer you two figure out. My suggestion on these things is always give them some time. Let them marinate. Honestly, consider her viewpoints for the next 3 months and have her not pressure you for a few months. That's it. You know, sometimes relieving the pressure, but honestly giving considerations to perspectives that you may at the current moment disagree with is a sign of honor in your relationship. Because if you just say no and turn around and don't give her, and she doesn't feel that she was at least duly considered, I mean, seriously considered, not just your, you know, you actually took the months to kind of go through your whole feelings, work through them, work through your fears. He said he has a fear that he's going to have to split attention. That's not how raising kids work. Because most of the time you're raising them together. They're in the same house, but they're all at the same time. You're raising them together. That's not splitting attention. They're getting the same attention at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's not how it works. It's not such a linear adventure. So I don't know. Take some time. I mean, honorable. Take some honest, honorable time. Take a step back. Examine your fears. Work through them. Doesn't mean you have to change your mind. And she should do the same thing. Work through her fears. Find out why she really wants to have another child so much. What's she afraid of if she doesn't have one? She needs to work through those as well. So it's not a singular thing. You both need to take some time, take the pressure off, step back and work through what you're afraid of. Then come back and have a different conversation. Because if you've worked through what you're afraid of, the conversation may end up in the same place, but it'll well be a different conversation. There's no direct answer to that one except that. And good luck. That's it. Okay, what's next?
Okay. The daughter keeps sneaking her phone at night over and over again. Okay. Excuse me. The daughter is 13, female, right?
Okay.
I know exactly what I was doing at 13 when I was sneaking calls on the phone. I called my boyfriend, and we were doing intimate things via phone.
Yeah.
So you may want to consider turning off her phone at night. You can do that. You can turn it off at night and only come on at, say, 9 o'clock in the morning.
You could do that. Mm-hmm. Or the other thing you could do is not put the boundaries on there in the first place and teach them how to use these things appropriately. Sometimes they will fail and sometimes they will succeed. But they will never learn to succeed if they don't get the chance to practice. I'm not judging one way or another. This is how I raised my kids. I taught them.
She's 13. She may not be capable.
She may not be, but she may be. And this is a decision that you generally make when you're raising your children very young. My daughter was using a keyboard and a mouse before she could really talk. She was 2-3 years old, where she could literally manipulate a keyboard and mouse to play a game. She could do it. She didn't need anybody's help. She knew what she was doing. I never put any restrictions on my children's use of computers. I was a hacker. Any restrictions I put on, I was just simply teaching them how to hack. So why would I do that? I know my children. If I put restrictions on, they would find a way around it. And so I'm not going to teach them that. So I didn't put restrictions on them. What I did was, is I made sure they knew how to operate on it safely. What they knew was safe, what they knew wasn't safe, essentially, you know, and so I approached it differently. So the other side is you could restrict her uses, and neither one of these, they're both legitimate courses of actions. Or you could say, okay, if you're gonna do this, you're gonna have to learn how to do it right. And you sit down and you have this serious conversation about internet safety and what to do and stalkers and scammers and the whole kit and caboodle. The people who will try to blackmail you saying, we saw what you did on your phone last night, but they really didn't. They're just trying to scare you into giving up information. You don't have to believe them. You know, you have to have the serious conversation. You have to know. You have to educate them. That's the two options. Neither one is wrong. You know, they both require their own amount of faith. Mm-hmm. So that's it. That's our suggestions. Okay, what's next?
How does traveling work when it comes to strollers and car seats after using Uber or taxi?
Oh, well, yeah, because you have to use an Uber or a taxi, you need to have a car seat.
Yeah, you do when you travel for work.
And so what the thing to do is you get one of those strollers that has, or it's a car seat at the same time.
Ooh.
We had one of those years ago, 20 years ago. So we had them 20 years ago. They've got them. They certainly have them now. And so you just pop the seat out of the stroller and you put it into the car. You've got yourself a car seat.
Nice.
Now, I think those are mainly for infants, but if you've got a toddler, then they're walking. So, I mean, if they're big enough where that kind of thing won't work, then they're big enough to walk, and you've got to carry one of those portable car seats around. It just is what it is. It would be nice as an Uber driver, if Uber drivers would keep one of some of those portable car seats around. So when someone gets stuck, like their car breaks down, they have to call an Uber to pick them up and they've got a child with them, you know, and the car seats in the car, or maybe they were in an accident and you can't use that car. You can't use the car seat again if the Uber driver had a car seat. But as an Uber driver, it's also an expense. And, you know, for something that only happens twice a year, it's hard to justify sometimes. Okay.
Okay. I ate my daughter's Easter eggs. She ate her daughter's chocolate Easter egg that the family bought her, but the baby's only one.
Oh, well, yeah. So,
and she's feeling just devastated that she did this.
You shouldn't be giving that much chocolate to a one-year-old anyway, so you're all good. Don't worry about it. Everybody steals their one-year-old's chocolate from Easter. That's called a tax. It's all good. It's a parenting tax. Y'all, you're fine.
Okay, occupational therapy for seven-year-old's fear of putting head underwater. Dude, I have one, my oldest daughter. She hates, she's 43 years old and she still hates getting her face wet.
Occupational therapy, I don't think they meant occupational therapy, but therapy, I'm not thinking of the word because occupational therapy is work therapy and seven-year-olds don't work. So, but you know what she meant. There's some type of therapy for fear of water. And it's not necessarily a bad idea as long as you're, you know, professionals, you know, getting therapy for her fears. It's good for her to conquer her fears. Seven, depends on the seven-year-old. Seems a little young for me, but depends on the seven-year-old. Seems a little long for them to understand what's happening fully. So, but again, depends on the seven-year-old and if she wants to get over her fear. If she wants to get over her fear, then she'll be all into it. If she's not interested in getting over her fear, then you're going to have to wait a little while. But that's it. Yes. How's the for the answer? Yes. As long as it's, you know, trained professionals and all that. I'm not opposed. Okay. Now we have two work questions.
Yes, we do.
All right. Let's see.
I was passed up for a promotion that went to a less qualified person. How should I handle this with my boss?
Define less qualified.
How could, my question is, what is there to handle?
Yeah, well, because there's two things. The new job, you're very qualified for the job you currently do. Doesn't mean you're qualified for what they want the person to do in the job that they've applied for. You may have the wrong skills for what they want done. Maybe they need a hard-nosed axeman, right? Maybe tough times are coming and they need someone who's willing to make tough, difficult decisions. You know, that other people don't have the mental makeup to do. Maybe they're gonna have to fire some people. Let's be blunt.
Yeah.
And maybe you're not the type of person who can deal with that. Maybe it would be too emotionally draining for you to do that. You couldn't do it. It would be too hard for you. Maybe they're doing you a favor. Or maybe you're on the chopping block. Maybe you're not as an exceptional employee as you think. Maybe you haven't shown the willingness to take risks and they have. You don't know. Right? You say you're more qualified. More qualified, define that. In order to define that, you have to find what they're looking for. And they're clearly not looking for what you are offering. Or the other person had different set of qualifications that you're not aware of. Or maybe you're just not very personable. Sometimes putting your head down and just doing your work isn't enough to get promoted. It's enough to get a little raise. It's enough for them to want you to be around. It's not enough for you to get promoted. It's just not. You haven't shown the interest. Okay, what's next?
Everyone keeps ignoring my emails. Okay, everyone else, according to him, everyone,
yes,
quote unquote, sends out emails and they all get responses back like in an hour. See? But he has to wait days.
Okay, well, one, are your emails important enough for them to get back with you within an hour? And do you explain that you need that information back that quickly in the email? If you just say, hey, when you guys get some time, can you send me the information for X, Y, and Z? They're going to do it when they can get to it. And it might take a couple of days. Hey, I've got a deadline coming up tomorrow night. Can you guys send me that information this afternoon? you'll get a response back. You have to be clear about what you need in your email. If you're all wishy-washy, you're going to get a wishy-washy response. If you need a quick, clear response, you have to have a quick, clear instructions to get back you in that response. It's quite simple. Stop writing wishy-washy emails. How's that? I can be blunt. The AI can help you. You know, you go to Bing, you click the little Copilot single on the side, you click professional, you paste in your email in the top box, and you just click it, generate, short, medium, or long, and you click generate, and it will rewrite it for you in a nice, firm tone. Trust me. Saves me all the time. I'm great at writing emails now because I don't actually write them. I stick in my talking points and let the AI write the actual finished product. And then you have to go edit it so it sounds like a human wrote it. But other than that, okay, what's next?
Does anyone actually like the company they work for?
Lots of people do.
Lots of people do, yeah?
Yeah. So, sadly, you don't. Now, whether that's because your company's mission and your values are misaligned, maybe you have bad coworkers or management, you know, who knows? Maybe you're just sitting there, you know, filling orders on an assembly line and you feel completely disconnected from a mission. That's usually why most people don't like their jobs. It's because there's no mission. It's just a job. You don't know why they're there. They're there for a paycheck instead of for something and a paycheck.
And a paycheck.
Yeah. It's not that the paycheck isn't important, but, you know, to like your job, you have to have something else. Okay.
My favorite coworker got laid off today. And so now their work day is changing.
Yeah. It's difficult, you know, getting laid off. It's hardest on those who get laid off, but it's difficult on those who are left behind as well. You know, not only are, you know, your personal relationships disrupted, you've also now your workflows are disrupted. And you're, you know, oftentimes it comes along with restructuring. So, you know, there's all kinds of uncertainty. And now the coworker, the person you commiserated with about the trials, tribulations, and successes is no longer there. The next couple months are going to be difficult. This is the time just to keep your head down, do your work. And, you know, in a couple months, you'll look up and you'll decide whether you still want to be there or not. Often happens when you get laid off, when layoffs happen, restructuring. Oftentimes, more people end up leaving because they don't like the new environment.
Sometimes.
Happens a lot. And oddly enough, it's actually when they do layoffs, they actually figure out another certain percentage is going to leave shortly thereafter because they don't like the new environment. Mm-hmm. It's kind of baked into the plan. It's just how it goes. Okay.
Uncomfortable with colleagues talking badly about others all the time.
Yeah, well, you could actually have the discussion. You could, you know, depending upon the size of your company, you could go to HR because that actually creates a hostile work environment and is creating problems. And it could create a long-term legal issue for the company if you really wanted to deal with it. Or you could just learn to tune that stuff out and keep your head down and going to work. Because sometimes those things aren't as the same. If you work in a male-dominated thing, in a male-dominated field, we can be absolutely vicious to our fellow coworkers, but it's part of the bonding process. For those of you in like the military, you understand like trauma bonding. It's kind of like trauma bonding in a sense. It's just a weird way of how men in that situation, we talk smack about each other. There's some truth to it, but we don't actually mean it. It wouldn't be funny if there was no truth to it.
Y'all are mean to each other,
but
man.
We're not. But we don't find it being mean to each other. We find it passing the time. again, it goes back to that we learn to give it back. And so since we give, it's give and take, it doesn't bother us. But if it's really bothered you, you talk to, you know, the people who are responsible for it, because that kind of thing can create a hostile working environment. And so maybe there is somebody who is not comfortable reporting that. So maybe you can stand up for somebody, or maybe you can mind your own business if it's, you know, it really depends. It's going to have to just make sure you're right, whatever you decide. Okay.
The usage of an angry emoji for my manager. How to interpret this? It called in sick. He left a text. I'm sorry. I'm not feeling very well. I'll see you tomorrow.
Okay.
And then he got an angry emoji back.
I hate the modern world. Why is managers talking in emoji? And why are you sending the calling out sick by text? It's just the modern world. Yeah, he's mad that you're calling out sick and kind of the last minute. What do you care? You knew this was going to happen when you called in sick. So, yeah. It is what it is. What do you want? You know, what do they want? Hey, he's mad. It means what it means. How mad is he is the question. I don't know. How many times have you called in sick is another question. All right, what's next?
What second job options would you recommend? Okay, he works like from afternoon into the evening during the weekdays, and he wants a weekend job.
Okay.
So what would you recommend?
Well, if you're just looking for something that's going to get you a job, kind of depends what you do, what your skills are.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, look for something that's always, that has high turnover, but it's also relatively easy. Something like a gym, you know, where you're checking in people at the gym and you're wiping down, you know, you don't have to do very much, but they also, for whatever reason, have high turnover. They'll take you. And all those 24-hour gyms are always looking for places. They are. For whatever reason, gyms have a high turnover rate. My guess is because you have a bunch of people who are just looking for some easy money to move on. But I don't know. There's no real good answer to that one. Any place that's looking for work, because there's no good options these days. There's just not. All the traditional options are getting, like in California, good luck getting a fast food job. Driving for Uber, Lyft, Amazon, some of those gig workers, those are still available if they're available in your area, but sometimes it can take time to get involved in. Food delivery is still a viable thing in certain areas. There's the risk of having too many of them in your area, and then you don't actually make very much money simply because supply and demand. You know, there's too many drivers in an area, and no one of you make enough money. So that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Buy a pressure washer. Go around and pressure wash people's driveways.
There you go.
You know, clean people's sidewalks. I don't know. But these days, the easiest thing to do is probably to go find a 24-hour gym and apply to be a check-in person.
Okay.
Back when I was younger, it used to be a janitor, but it's actually getting into it to be a janitor is hard these days. Okay, what's next?
How do I answer what's a gap in your resume?
You change your resume to a skills-based resume, and that way you don't have a gap in your resume. You should have a one-page cover letter and a one-page resume, and your resume should be a skills-based resume, not a jobs-based resume. Especially if you have any amount of skills. People don't care about your history. They care about what you can do. And so creating a job-based resume, one, it's telling them how old you are. Right? Without telling them how old you are. So don't. Just don't put it in there. fill out a jobs-based resume, put in what your accomplishments were.
Very nice.
You just don't, you know, the change the way you do resumes is my suggestion. Okay, but also there are things you can do when you talk about gaps if you want to fill that. If you'd had time, say, if you were raising your children, then you were raising your children. If you were dealing with sick family, you were dealing with sick family. If you had spent time volunteering, you'd spent time in donating your talents to volunteering, you know. But my suggestion is a skills-based resume, which means you can include those volunteering skills that you've learned volunteering into your resume, which if you have an employment-based resume, you cannot. Mm. Which is why I changed my resume. I used a skills-based resume. Okay. So, man, we're running late tonight. It's already over an hour. Okay, let's run through these intimacy questions. We should probably change that to intimacy. All right, what's next?
Are men supposed to do most or all of the work during sex?
Well, only if you're a prude.
It should be fairly equally balanced, I think.
Well, I don't think it's ever going to be ever equally balanced simply because of the physical mechanics.
Okay. All right.
So, but you know, your effort could come. It doesn't have, just because you don't have to give equal effort doesn't mean you don't give none. Right. Every bit of effort is appreciated. Just so we say that, leave it at that. Okay. What's next?
How do I explain to my boyfriend that he's too rough? He doesn't seem to get it. She loves him a lot. He's a great guy.
Uh-huh.
But he gets very enthusiastic.
How old are they? Because it doesn't say here. You didn't know?
Well, they're in their early 20s.
Yeah, okay. Well, this is what you do. You tell them no.
Ooh.
Tell them no. And then you tell them why. And over time, he'll learn to mature. He's acting essentially at the moment. My guess is he's on instinct. You know, male instinct is to finish. And so he's just got to learn. Sometimes lessons are hard. Tell him no. And then why? Those are difficult conversations. But there are also conversations where, you know, people grow. And your relationship grows. So they're not bad conversations. They're just difficult. But in order for him to get how serious it is, you're going to have to tell him no.
Okay.
And then follow up with the explanation. And be prepared. Practice it. Okay.
Has anyone ever been woken up by sex?
Well, have married couples ever existed? Yes. And let's be clear. You have to kind of have this as a pre-approved agreement that it's okay. Not everybody's okay with it. I mean, there are marriage privileges, but even marriage privileges have to be discussed.
I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
It did once.
What?
I was woken up. But it's a rare thing.
My guess is it probably happens. Women probably wake men up more often than the other way around in the grand scheme of things. Men probably think about it more, but women probably do it more often.
Well, we knew you guys would be down for it.
Yeah, and we never know how you guys are going to react. So. So there's that.
And it depends on what day.
Yeah, God knows. And so, it's pretty safe, you know, for one way and the other way, like I said. But it's, again, you can discuss. These things can be discussed and see if your partner minds. Some of them like it. And so if they, you know, one of these things that's rarely talked about that needs to be discussed. So have the discussion. Okay, what's next?
Turned on by physical therapy. What is he supposed to do?
Get a different physical therapist?
Who? Yeah. If you're a guy, get a guy.
Yeah,
well, if you're not gay.
And yeah. whatever it is, just get a different physical therapist.
Okay.
Because it may, I mean, you could sit there and spend the time and work through whatever it is. And yeah, but it's going to take a couple months. And yeah, just get a different physical therapist. My suggestion.
What?
Okay.
Discourage sex after reading what men write about women's bodies. She read a piece that had some derogatory terms regarding women's lady bits. And okay, now well. she's afraid. She doesn't really like how she looks.
Now this.
And she's a little insecure.
Because everybody's written everything about everything. I mean, she's going to focus on the derogatory things that people have said about women's bodies. But what about all the good things people have said about women's bodies? She's going to ignore all that. I'm going to ignore all the great things people have said throughout the millennia, thousands of years, pre-written stuff. I'm not going to pay any attention to none of that. No. I read this one thing on the internet. That this one guy with 5 followers on Twitter said, and now my whole life is ruined. No, she has a body image issue, and she has seen this, and she's latched onto it as confirmation, and it's sad, but it's also a little humorous. She was already discouraged to have sex, let's be honest.
Well, yeah.
And so she's now had this, has cemented that discouragement. So my suggestion is to go look for those things that are more encouraging. There are people who love your body the way it is. There are people who love you regardless of what your body looks like. And so that's what you focus on. Don't focus on the people who don't like your body because you don't care about them. They're not interested in you anyway. So what do you care? Someone loves you out there. Someone loves how you look out there. Or even if you have physical deformities, there's someone who loves you and doesn't see those. They're not blind. They're not stupid. It just doesn't register to them the way it does to other people because they see beyond that. That is what you should be looking for. But go read some of that poetry about all those nice things people write about women's bodies. My God, there's so much poetry about how men love women's bodies and focus on the stuff that some
makes me blush. Some of the stuff. I mean, they're really graphic.
Have you read Shakespeare ever? You know, it's like. Hello? Okay, so what's next?
Okay, my partner is a bit of a pillow princess.
Okay, define pillow princess.
She won't put any effort into doing anything. No ideas. You know, she won't make any suggestions. She uses very little feedback.
Oh, so is she the one who wrote the first question?
No.
Are we sure? Well, you're just going to have to decide if you're okay with that or not.
They're pretty young. They're early 20s.
She's not going to change. She's just not. It's not in her.
Mm.
I mean, who knows? I could be wrong. She could get a moment to find a time of sexual discovery and whatnot. And my guess is if you're in a long-term relationship with her, when she does that, you're going to lose your relationship. So this is what you're going to get. You're going to have to either accept this or not. How much do you love her? If you truly love her, then you won't mind. Doesn't that mean you're going to necessarily always be happy about it, but everything else is more important.
I mean, she's not negative, and apparently she goes give a response. You know, she's vocal, makes noises and stuff, but she's not really.
She's not a driven.
No, she's not driven sexually.
She's not driven sexually. Now, she could be one of those who hits that in her 30s.
Could be.
Now, but that actually happens far more often than we actually are willing to talk about.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's part of that biological clock thing. There's hormones, different sets of hormones kick in at different times, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in our 30s, our hormones all start to change again. And, you know, the hormonal difference in our 30s with some women as it changes, you know, the mix changes. You never know how it's going to. Yeah. There's lots of women get their, what is it? They say women hit their sexual peak at 32. There's a reason for that.
And men hit theirs at 18.
Yeah. Nature's a cruel, cruel mistress. All right. So what's this last one we got?
Do you wear makeup to a guy's house for sex, darling?
Do I? No, I don't.
I have.
But my guess would be you don't want to wear too much. You probably put on enough to make yourself look like you're presentable, put together, whatever that is.
Yeah. You don't. I left off the eyeshadow.
I mean, you probably don't go as they used to say it back in the day, you don't put your full face on. You just kind of, you know.
Some mascara, a little blush, some lipstick, off we go.
Yeah. Well, because, it's not like you're going out to dinner and trying to convince them to come back to your house, right? You're already. You're just trying to put the envelope in the paper in the envelope at this stage. You know, you don't care. Put the envelope, put the paper in the envelope, lick the stamp, all that good stuff. Be done with it. All right, we're out of here before I get myself in trouble. Oh, we forgot to remind you that you can find us at latenightlove.us. You can send us your love letters and questions, comments, etc. to love@latenightlove.us. And from me and Lubby, good night. Have a good week. Please remember to love everybody. Good night.